The Three Musketeers by Alexandre Dumas. On the first Monday of the month of April, 1625, the Bourg of Meung appeared to be in as complete a state of revolution as if the Huguenots had come to make a second Rochelle of it. Many citizens directed their steps toward the hostelry of the Jolly Miller, before which was gathered a compact and rapidly increasing group, vociferous and full of curiosity. A young man, face long and brown, high cheekbones indicating craftiness, his eyes open and intelligent, his nose hooked but finely chiselled. Too big for a youth, too small for a grown man, an experienced eye might have taken him for a farmer's son upon a journey, had it not been for the long sword, which, dangling from a leathern baldric, hit against its owner's calves as he walked, and against his steed's rough side when he was on horseback. For our young man had a steed, which was the observed of all observers. It was a Bayern pony, from 12 to 14 years old, with yellow coat, no hair in his tail, but not without wind-galls on his legs, which, though going with his head lower than his knees, contrived nevertheless to perform his 8 leagues a day. Unfortunately, the qualities of this horse were so well concealed under his strangely coloured hide and his unaccountable gait that the appearance of the said pony at Meung produced an unfavourable feeling that extended to his master. And this feeling was the more painful to young D'Artagnan, because he was conscious himself of the ridiculous appearance he made on such a steed, good horseman as he was. As he was alighting from his horse at the gate of the Jolly Miller, D'Artagnan spied, through an open window on the ground floor, a man of fine figure and lofty bearing, but of rather grim countenance and a scar, talking with two persons who appeared to listen to him most respectfully. D'Artagnan fancied, as was natural for him to do, that he himself must have been the object of their conversation, and listened. This time D'Artagnan was only in part mistaken. He himself was not the subject of remark, but his horse was. At the moment in which D'Artagnan fixed his eyes upon the man in the violet doublet, the man made one of his most knowing and profound remarks respecting the Béarnais pony. His two auditors burst out laughing, and he himself, though contrary to his custom, suffered a pale smile to stray over his countenance. There could be no doubt. D'Artagnan was really insulted. Full then of this conviction, he advanced, with one hand on the hilt of his sword and the other resting on his hip. "I say, sir, you, sir, who are hiding yourself behind that shutter. Yes, you, sir. Tell me what you are laughing at, and we will laugh together." The man withdrew his eyes slowly from the nag to its rider, and after quite a long pause, with an accent of irony and insolence impossible to be described, he replied to D'Artagnan, "I was not speaking to you, sir." "But I am speaking to you," replied the young man, exasperated by this mixture of insolence and good manners, of politeness and scorn. The stranger looked at him for a moment longer with his faint smile, and retiring from the window, came out of the hostelry with a slow step and placed himself before the horse within 2 paces of D'Artagnan. D'Artagnan, seeing him approach, drew his sword a foot out of the scabbard. "I do not often laugh, sir," said the stranger, "as you may perceive by the expression of my face. But nevertheless, I insist upon retaining the privilege of laughing when I please." "And I," cried D'Artagnan, "will allow no man to laugh when it displeases me." "Indeed, sir," continued the stranger, more quietly than ever. "Well, that is perfectly right." And turning on his heel, was about to re-enter the hostelry by the front gate, under which D'Artagnan, as he came up, had observed a saddled horse standing. But D'Artagnan was not the person thus to allow a man to escape him who had once had the insolence to laugh at him. He drew his sword entirely from the scabbard and followed him, crying, "Turn, turn, Master Joker, lest I strike you from behind!" "Strike me," said the other, turning sharply round and surveying the young man with as much astonishment as contempt. "Come, come, my good fellow, you must be mad." He had scarcely finished when D'Artagnan made such a furious lunge at him that if he had not sprung nimbly backward, it is probable that he would have jested for the last time. The stranger then, perceiving that the matter was going beyond a joke, drew his sword, saluted his adversary, and gravely placed himself on guard. But at the same moment, his two auditors, accompanied by the host, fell upon D'Artagnan with sticks, shovels, and tongs. D'Artagnan let fall his sword, which was struck from his hand by the blow of a stick, and broken in two pieces. Another blow, full upon his forehead, at the same moment, brought him to the ground, covered with blood and almost fainting. It was at this period that people came flocking to the scene of action from all sides. The host, fearful of consequences, with the help of his servants, carried the wounded man into an upstairs chamber, where some trifling attention was bestowed upon him, but then insisted that, notwithstanding his weakness, he should get up and depart as quickly as possible. D'Artagnan, half stupefied, arose and began to descend the stairs. But on arriving at the kitchen, the first thing he saw was his antagonist, who stood quietly talking beside the step of a heavy carriage drawn by two large Norman horses. His interlocutor, whose head appeared through the carriage window, was a woman of from 20 to 22 years of age. D'Artagnan perceived at a glance that this woman was young and beautiful. She was pale and fair, with long curls falling in profusion over her shoulders, had large, languishing blue eyes, rosy lips, and hands of alabaster. She was talking with great animation with the stranger. "His Eminence then orders me," said the lady, "to return instantly to England, and to inform him immediately should the Duke leave London." "And my other instructions?" asked the fair traveller. "They are contained in this box, which you will not open until you are on the other side of the channel." "Very well. And you? What are you going to do?" I shall return to Paris." "What? Without chastising this insolent boy?" asked the lady. The stranger was about to reply, but at the moment he opened his mouth, D'Artagnan, who had heard all, rushed forward through the open door. "This insolent boy chastises others," cried he, "and I sincerely hope that he whom he means to chastise will not escape him as he did before." "Will not escape him," replied the stranger, knitting his brow. "No. Before a woman you would not dare to fly, I presume?" "Remember," cried Milady, seeing the stranger lay his hand upon his sword, "remember that the least delay may ruin everything." "True," cried the gentleman. "Begone, then, on your way, and I will go mine." And bowing to the lady, he sprang into his saddle, her coachman at the same time applying his whip vigorously to his horses. The two interlocutors thus separated, taking opposite directions at full gallop. "Base coward! False nobleman!" cried D'Artagnan, springing forward. But his wound had rendered him too weak to support such an exertion. "He is a coward indeed," grumbled the host, drawing near to D'Artagnan. "Yes, a base coward," murmured D'Artagnan, "but she was very beautiful." He then drew two crowns majestically from his purse, gave them to the host, who accompanied him cap in hand to the gate, remounted his yellow horse, which bore him without any further accident to Paris, where he repaired to the residence of the famous Monsieur de Tréville. Louis XIII had made de Tréville the captain of his musketeers, who were to Louis XIII, in devotedness, or rather in fanaticism, what his ordinaries had been to Henry III, and his Scotch guard to Louis XI. And then there was the cardinal. For his part, and in this respect, His Eminence was not behindhand with the king. When he saw the formidable and chosen body by which Louis XIII surrounded himself, this second, or rather, this first king of France became desirous that he too should have his guard. He had his musketeers then, as Louis XIII had his, and these two powerful rivals vied with each other in procuring the most celebrated swordsmen, not only from all the provinces of France, but also from all foreign states. The court of Tréville's hotel, situated in the Rue du Vieux Colombier, resembled a camp. 50 to 60 musketeers paraded constantly about, armed to the teeth and ready for anything. The day on which D'Artagnan presented himself, the assemblage was imposing, particularly for a provincial just arriving from his province. The centre of the most animated group was a musketeer of great height, of a haughty countenance, and dressed in a costume so peculiar as to attract general attention. He did not wear the uniform cloak, but a cerulean blue doublet, a little faded and worn, and over this a magnificent baldric worked in gold, which shone like water ripples in the sun. All admired his embroidered baldric, and D'Artagnan more than anyone. "What can you expect, Athos?" said the musketeer. "The fashion is coming in. It is a folly, I admit, but still it is the fashion. Besides, one must lay out one's inheritance somehow." "Ah, Porthos," replied his companion, a handsome and aristocratic-looking man, "don't think to palm upon us that you obtained that baldric by paternal generosity. It must have been given to you by that veiled lady with whom I met you the other Sunday near the gate Saint-Honoré." "No, 'pon my honour, by the faith of a gentleman. I bought it with my own money. I paid 12 pistoles for it, didn't I, Aramis?" said Porthos, turning toward another musketeer. This other musketeer formed a perfect contrast to his interrogator. He was a young man of about 22 or 23, with an open, ingenuous countenance, dark, mild eyes, and cheeks rosy and downy as an autumn peach. He answered the appeal of his friend by an affirmative nod of his head. "Monsieur de Tréville awaits Monsieur d'Artagnan," interrupted a servant, throwing open the door of the office. At this announcement, everyone became mute, and amidst the general silence, the young man crossed the antechamber and entered the apartment of the captain of the musketeers. Monsieur de Tréville awaited him. "I loved your father very much," said he. "What can I do for the son? Tell me quickly, my time is not my own." "Sir," said D'Artagnan, "it is my intention to request of you, in remembrance of the friendship which you have not forgotten, the uniform of a musketeer." "Well, young man," replied Monsieur de Tréville, "His Majesty's decision is always necessary, and I inform you with regret that no one becomes a musketeer without the preliminary ordeal of several campaigns, certain brilliant actions, or a service of 2 years in some regiment less favoured than ours. You ought also to endeavour to perfect yourself in the exercises of becoming a gentleman. I will write a letter today to the director of the Royal Academy, and tomorrow he will admit you without any expense to yourself. You will make some desirable acquaintances, and from time to time you can call upon me just to tell me how you are getting on, and to say whether I can be of any service to you." Leaving his young compatriot in the embrasure of the window, he seated himself at a table in order to write the promised letter of recommendation. While he was doing this, D'Artagnan, having no better employment, amused himself by looking out of the window at the musketeers, who went away one after another, and he followed them with his eyes till they disappeared at the bend of the street. Monsieur de Tréville, having written the letter, sealed it, and rising, approached the young man in order to give it to him. But at the very moment that D'Artagnan stretched out his hand to receive it, Monsieur de Tréville was highly astonished to see his protégé make a sudden spring, become crimson with passion, and rush from the room, crying, "Ah, 'sblood, he shall not escape me this time, the traitor!" as he disappeared. "The devil take the madman," murmured Monsieur de Tréville. D'Artagnan, in a state of rage, crossed the antechamber in 3 bounds, and was darting toward the stairs when, in his heedless course, he ran headlong into a musketeer who was coming out of one of Monsieur de Tréville's private rooms. "Excuse me," said D'Artagnan, endeavouring to resume his course, "excuse me, but I am in a hurry." Scarcely had he descended the first stair when a hand of iron seized him by the scarf and stopped him. "You are in a hurry," said the musketeer. "Under that pretense you run against me. You say, 'excuse me,' and you believe that is sufficient?" "'Pon my word," replied D'Artagnan, recognizing Athos, "I did not do it intentionally, and not having done it intentionally, I said, 'excuse me.' It appears to me that that is quite enough." "Sir," said Athos, letting him go, "you are not polite. It is easy to perceive that you come from afar.